Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking a beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, if you are our special guest this afternoon is Mr. Yuri Filsetinsky. Did I pronounce your name right?
Yep, close enough. Yuri Filsetinsky.
All right,
fine. I know it's always a problem, yep.
All right, and Yuri, of course, was born in Russia. He speaks with somewhat of a Russian accent, but he's trained here. Certainly he went to Brandeis University. But he and his partner wrote a fascinating book called Blowing Up Russia, The Secret Plot to Bring Back the KGB Terror. However, the co-author of the book was a man named Alexander Litvinenko.
Right.
And, of course, he was poisoned, you remember here, simply last year by the KGB, and no question at all. He was poisoned because the last thing that they want is for the people of the United States or the people of Russia to believe that Russia is going back into this same sort of Stalinist state that it was before the Berlin Wall came down. So, Yuri, why don't you sort of pick up this story and tell our listeners why you and your partner were concerned, and then, of course, what we know about his fate.
Well, we started to write a book together in 2000 after we realized that President Putin tries to recreate the small Soviet Union out of the Russian Federation, that he changed the policy of reform, pro-Western reformation, which Yeltsin started. And we decided, you know, to analyze and to see how this person actually happened to be the president of Russia. And we realized very soon that what's happening was that President Putin was promoted to the position of the president by the Russian Secret Service. And indeed, as soon as he became the president, and he, of course, until August of 1999, was in charge of the FSB, which is former KGB. And as soon as he became the president, he started to promote to political positions, major political positions in the country, former KGB officers and former generals or current serving generals of military. And today we have between 70% and 80% of major political positions in the country taken by those people. Indeed, for the first time in history, not only in history of Russia, for the first time in history in general, we have Secret Service running the country. It's a completely new phenomenon. No one really understands how to deal with this, because these are people who do not know how to build. They know how to destroy, to suppress, how to kill. They are not afraid to kill, how to control. That's the major part of the ideology. They indeed do not have ideology in a classical sense. And before this, of course, we have the Soviet government or Communist Party who would rule the Soviet Union using KGB as a tool. Now we have KGB in control of the whole country. And so we started to analyze, you know, the steps which were taken by Putin in order to become the president of Russia. And we understood that in September of 1999, when several terrorist acts happened in Russia, major terrorist acts. Four apartment buildings were blown up. 300 people were killed. Again, in 1999, this was the major terrorist act in history in Russia.
I'm going to ask you just to hold that thought here. We're going to be right. We're going to bring some other stations on board, and then we're going to drop some stations off for 3 minutes, and then, of course, we'll get back to the story. So it'll be a little repetitive here. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our special guest this afternoon is Yuri Filsetinsky, Andrew Garcia has written a book called Blowing Up Russia. Now, his partner in this, in writing the book, was Alexander Litvinenko, and of course you remember that Alexander Litvinenko had worked for the KGB for some 20 years, and he had left, he had defected to the West, and writing this book with Yuri, who is our guest today, Blowing Up Russia, why, of course, he was living in London. He was poisoned here with polonium last November, and died shortly thereafter. And of course, there seems to be very little doubt that this was simply a KGB hit. But then a lot of people are dying in Russia today. The number of reporters who've been critical of the government have died under very mysterious circumstances. Anybody who really, of course, opposes the government, many of them, of course, are being, frankly, just killed. And, of course, there's no outcry from around the world. People hear about it. They sort of shrug their shoulders. But certainly Yuri was talking about in the late 90s, there was a number of so-called terrorist attacks in Russia, and certainly one of them, of course, was the bombing of the apartment houses. What was that, 300 or 400 people killed?
300 people were killed.
And was this a KGB operation?
This was a KGB operation, and we are not dealing with theory. You see, we are dealing with facts. On 22nd of September, when the fifth apartment building was about to blow up, local police found explosive materials and detonator in one of the basements of the houses in Ryazan. This is a town not far from Moscow. And this was announced on 22nd of September as a major victory for Russians in their fight against terrorism, because after the four buildings were already blown up, 300 people killed, finally local police found explosive materials. What even more, next day, local police, which encircled the building, literally, everything they could search, arrested those two terrorists. And again, this was announced as a major victory for law enforcement in Russia. And even President Putin personally congratulated, people of Russia with this great victory. The problem was that the moment the local police arrested those two people, they presented the ideas of FSB, of the Russian Secret Service, right, and were immediately taken into custody Moscow Central Office.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course Yuri was telling us about this bombing in Russia, and here, of course, is the apartment houses are destroyed, and hundreds of people are killed, and immediately they say, oh, it's the terrorists, oh my goodness, we need more power to the government. And then shortly thereafter they find the explosives, the local police find the explosives in another building. They apprehend the two terrorists, and what did they find out when they apprehended the terrorists?
And where they arrested them on 23rd of September, those two terrorists presented ideas of the Russian security officers. They were immediately taken by Moscow Central Office, and we've never seen them. This happened on the 23rd of September, the same day Russian government started the war against Chechnya, claiming that these were Chechen separatists who were responsible for the bombings. And they were doing it, of course, for the purpose. They were quick enough because they were afraid that the Russian public will realize what's going on, that this are not Chechen separatists who are blowing up buildings. This is Russian secret police.
Well, of course, here in America, we call them the agent provocateurs. They're people who are pretending, of course, to oppose the government, whereas actually they're working for the government. They're agents of the government. And then, of course, they commit atrocities. And then that is used to increase the government's control over the individuals, the citizens, and, of course, in Russia. And why this was then to justify the war against Chechnya. Is that about the way it worked?
That was the idea. This was the plan. The plan was that they blew up the building, the Russian Secret Service. They would claim that Chechens were doing this, and this will allow the Russian government to start the war with the Chechen Republic. That's exactly what was done. And, of course, Chechens were not involved at all in those terrorist acts, and this was the Russian Secret Service. This is even more dangerous than, you know, provocateurs, because this was officers of the KGB who were doing it. They were not pretending even to be terrorists at all. They were just officers who were blowing up buildings. And we started also to investigate how the first Chechen war started. And we realized that they were doing the same in 94-95 prior to the first Chechen war. In 94-95, there were small terrorist acts in Moscow. You know, we became cynical, unfortunately. And when I say small terrorist acts, several buses were blown up, several couple people were killed. In 96, local Moscow police arrested those terrorists. All of them happened to be members of the Russian Secret Service. They were sentenced. They were put in prison. They spent some time in prison. The FSB, the KGB, had difficulties, but they finally got them out. All those agents, they were able to get out of the prison in the course of 1 or 2 years. But nevertheless, they were sentenced by the Russian court in 96. So this is a proven fact that the Russian Secret Service was behind the terrorist attacks both in 94-95 prior to the First Chechen War and in 99 prior to the Second Chechen War.
What about what happened at Belsen, you know, where all the children were killed? Do we know anything about that?
No, this is a different story. There are two terrorist attacks, major terrorist acts, where Chechens definitely were involved, and this was the, you know, operation prepared by Chechen terrorists. The best one, of course, which became the major terrorist attack, because 350 people almost were killed. And Nordos, the hostage takeover of Nordos Theater in Moscow. Those two operations were done by Chechen terrorists. But this happened later, once again. We are talking about September of 99 bombings, which were happening prior to the presidential elections. And that's how President Putin was presented to the Russian public, as a former FSB chief who is ready to fight against terrorism, who has strong background in military and in secret service, who has the support of both military and secret service. And because the situation seems to be very dangerous, because, again, several buildings were blown up, two of them in Moscow, Russian public reluctantly voted for Putin during the elections. And that's how Putin became the president. And that's how the FSB, or former KGB, came to power. As soon as they came to power, this is 2000, they started to take control over major TV stations, over major newspapers. For all practical purposes, there is no freedom of speech in Russia anymore. That's over. Several brilliant journalists were killed, including, of course, Anna Politkovskaya, who was killed recently, and whom I knew, who was a beautiful journalist and beautiful human being. And Litvinenko then, of course, was poisoned in London. This is the second murder, at least, of a foreign, of a citizen of Russia, former citizen of Russia abroad. Before this, former president of the Chechen Republic, Yandarbiev, was killed by Russian operatives in Qatar. But Litvinenko's case was different. You see, Litvinenko was outspoken. He was critical of President Putin, of the Russian Secret Service. But he was, acting as a journalist. He was writing. He was talking. He was not involved in any political activity. And nevertheless, he was killed.
Yeah, because for our listeners out there now, this is Litvinenko was Yuri's partner. They wrote the book together. And, of course, he was able to then put into this book we're talking about today, Blowing Up Russia, you know, his experience. Of how much was he, 20 years with the KGB?
Well, Litvinenko, of course, was a defector from the FSB. It started for him in 98 when he went with public information about criminal orders which he was receiving from the, top officers, generals of the FSB, including the order to kill Boris Berezovsky, who at that time was not only the richest person in Russia and a very influential politician, but he also was a person who was holding a high government office. And in order to kill him, coming from the Russian Secret Service, from the FSB, was definitely an illegal order. And Litvinenko went public with this information about immediately after this press conference, which he gave in November of 98. He was fired from the FSB. He was then put in prison for 9 months. The Russian court acquitted him because in 99 the court was fairly independent, and since Litvinenko was not guilty of any crimes, the court acquitted him, and Litvinenko was released. But it was clear that it was just a matter of time before they will put him in prison again, or they'll probably even try to kill him in Russia. And, you know, he made a decision to emigrate or to escape from Russia, and this was done in 2000.
And, of course, this man he was to kill now has escaped and is living in London, isn't he?
Well, he was living in London. He landed in London on 1st of November of 2000, exactly 6 years later, on 1st of November of 2006. He was with polonium by two FSB officers. Now, this murder was planned as a perfect murder. At least two people, I believe, were killed with polonium in Russia. One was a major politician, an oppositionist, Yuri Shikachikin, a member of the Russian parliament. And usually a person who would be poisoned by polonium would die in the course of a week or two. Litvinenko was very strong. He did not smoke, he did not drink. For this reason, he was holding for 23 days. And because of this, the British doctors had 23 days to find out what was used as a poisoning. And 2 hours before his death, on 23rd of November, they finally realized that the Russian government was using polonium-210. And since polonium is a radioactive material, then, of course, they knew that it left traces. And that's how everything became clear. But it was clear not because, you know, the Russian government or the Russian Secret Service was stupid to use the radioactive material. They just never saw that it's going to be detected, because we are talking about alpha radiation, which is very short, literally half inch or 1 centimeter, and it's almost impossible to track it, because it has to be tracked only in liquid. You cannot detect it if the person is already dead. And no one actually was expecting Litvinenko to hold for 23 days.
Well, of course, now the KGB or somebody poisoned the man who was running for president of Ukraine as well.
Oh, well, of course. There were several poisonings, including the poisoning of Mr. Yushchenko, which is definitely a poisoning. And not an accident. I mentioned Shikachikin. There were several people gunned down in Russia, two of them members of the Russian parliament. There were several journalists killed. I mean, it's really an outrage. I mean, there are killings happening in Russia. And I'm afraid that this is not, unfortunately, the end of the story, because in 2008 we are going to have elections in Russia. And prior to this time, I think it's going to be very dangerous for many people who are in opposition to the present government, to President Putin. Several political parties were prohibited. You probably, of course, know that several days ago there was a protest in Russia, which was actually, you know, suppressed by police without any particular reason to do this. We are entering a different period. We are entering a different period in the history of Russia. I think the democracy is over for now.
And, of course, you remember, of course, Andropov, the head of the KGB, became the president, and then Gorbachev, and now Putin. They all come from the Soviet secret police. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, Yuri, and of course, the picture you're painting is a tragic one. What about the people of Russia? You know what I'm reading, and I don't know whether there's any truth to it, but a lot of the people in Russia seem to want the return of a strong man. They don't seem to be as concerned as they really should be with the implications as far as the return of a Stalinist state.
Well, you see, the rule of the game is very simple. If we try to remember how Soviet people lived under the Soviet regime, then you live a simple life. As long as you do not deal with the government or with politics, as long as you do not oppose the government, you live quiet and comparatively normal life without any problems. Basically, Putin is introducing the old Soviet system. If you are just a businessman who doesn't want to be involved in politics and who doesn't want to be in a position to the government, then you are allowed to have your small business. Of course, there are some problems with businesses as well when those businesses become profitable, and some people, including influential people from the government, may want to have shares in your business, but that's another story. But if you are even an oligarch and agrees to support President Putin, then you are allowed to be very rich. And we have several oligarchs like Abramovich, like Friedman, like Batanin, Peter Ivan, etc., who are living in Russia quietly and are allowed to earn billions of dollars. At the same time, we have oligarchs who did not agree with Putin and who, for political reasons, went into an opposition. We have Berezovsky in London, we have Michael Khodorkovsky in prison, and we have, like, Nevzon in Israel, etc. So the rules are very simple, and these rules apply to simple Russian citizens. If you are not involved in politics, if you are not a member of opposition, you just live your normal life, and you might be fairly happy with the current economic situation in the country.
Well, now, is the economy doing fairly well, and is life for the average individual who is not taking a stand on this, these ideas of politics or freedom, is life better than it was in years past?
Well, you see, unfortunately, Russia is still a country of two cities, Moscow and St. Petersburg. And the majority of tourists or foreigners traveling to Russia, of course, they see just Moscow and just St. Petersburg. The moment you leave those cities, and I mean literally you may be just 1 hour away from a city, you enter in the previous century, not even the previous century, you are probably entering 19th century Russia. And the situation which we see in Moscow is very artificial, because of course with all those high prices for gas and for oil, all money are concentrated in Russia, in Moscow. You have probably around 80% of all money concentrated in the Moscow banks. You have probably probably 50% of all businessmen living in Moscow. Some of them are in St. Petersburg, but usually they spend in Moscow at least 50% of their time.
Hold that thought for just a moment, please, while we have bring our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Yuri is telling us that certainly if you go to St. Petersburg or go to Moscow, why you see fairly modern cities with a great deal of money concentrated in the banks, and here is where the business and industry is taken care of. But if you get an hour outside of either one of these cities, why you go back a century or maybe even two centuries, and he's talking about you're out in the areas where, of course, they actually, you're going into 19th century Russia. It just is not modernized at all, because there are cars there. There are factories, but certainly in the rural areas, it's really pretty primitive. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, yes, of course, because there are no roads. There is no culture at all. And it's a major problem for the whole country, because, again, the government now came back to the old idea of centralized Russia. That's not what Yeltsin was trying to do. Yeltsin, of course, was trying to decentralize Russia, and he was doing this for several reasons. First of all, he knew that the major reason why the Soviet Union collapsed, of course, because Soviet Union was not able to decentralize, and everything in the Soviet Empire was centralized from Moscow, and Moscow was given orders. Now, Yeltsin, of course, wanted to change the system. He wanted to give to local institutions, local governments, governors, as much power, local power, as they could handle. Putin comes back to the old idea of centralized country when everything is ruled by Moscow. And people know this. I mean, those people involved in business know this. So they now know that they have to be in Moscow if they want to survive as business people, as entrepreneurs, you know, as successful business people. That's why everything came back to Moscow, and Moscow is booming, of course. But the rest of the country is suffering, literally suffering.
Well, now, my understanding is that certainly they had local election of the governors in the various states there of Russia, and only recently has Putin simply done away with the electoral process. Now he appoints the governors. Is that correct?
Exactly. This was one of the first, actually, indeed the first major decree signed by Putin. He created government institutions which were put between elected president and elected governors. This was definitely violation of the Russian constitution. He then destroyed the high chamber of the Russian parliament, because the Russian parliament has like two chambers. And now he replaces the institution of governors which were elected by governors who first had to be approved by the president of Russia. So this of course, is a major change in the Russian constitution. This is definitely an illegal act. But unfortunately, Russia is a country where, legal issues are still undeveloped, and legal system is not developed at all. And court system, of course, is not developed because courts are not independent. And the corruption, as we know, is terrible, especially in the Russian court system, which is very corrupt.
And, of course, the Russian people really don't... I mean, sure, they'd like to be free. I'm sure everybody in the world would like to be free. But they don't have really a culture of freedom, and so temporary freedom really has not accomplished what they would like it to. And, of course, there's this threat of terrorism, which they believe that they have to have the government there to protect them from those wicked terrorists. And my understanding now, of course, is not only the KGB, or at least the secret police, are being strengthened, but there's a great deal of money now is being invested in the military to build up the military and your nuclear or sophisticated missile system. Would that be true?
Well, this is true, but you see, they're doing it probably even not because they would like to modernize the Russian army. I personally do not believe that they will be able to deal with this, that they will succeed in building a modern Russian army, because, again, the system is so corrupt that this is impossible. They increase the budget because this gives opportunity to military to steal more money out of that budget. This is not properly used, and even if you invest, two times or three times more money into Russian military, this probably won't help. I'm quite sure that Russian rockets will not fly better because of this. I do not think that Russia is able or will be able ever to become militarily a great power which would be able to compare itself with the United States. This is probably impossible. Putin has this in mind. He has those generals who are...
All that stuff. We'll be back
right
in this moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest, of course, is Yuri Felsitsinsky, and we're talking about what's going on in Russia today. Because this, of course, is going one day very, very soon to have a tremendous impact on what's going on in America, because Russia has become the largest oil producer in the world and the largest natural gas producer in the world, and this must be generating a great deal of money for the central government, is it?
Well, yes, of course, and those all of money are concentrated in Moscow in the pockets of several people. Don't think that those money are spread equally among population. Don't think that Russians live better now because the oil prices and gas prices are much higher. This is not true at all. This is not true at all. Russia is still a country where a very limited amount of people, very small amount of people, controls major financial, income of or major amount of money coming out of the sale of gas and oil.
Well, now, did they ever, of course, establish stock companies like we have in the United States, where the average Russian citizen could buy shares of stock and share in some of the profits? Or are there any profits that are distributed out of the public?
Well, of course, there are companies which have shares. Of course, there is Russian stock market, but unfortunately, everything in the Russian stock market belongs to internal trading. I mean, if you enter this market out of nowhere, this is going to be your major mistake, because everything in Russia belongs to those dealers who use inside information and who know what they're doing. So for this purpose, the stock market exists, but it's not really advised for Russian public to participate in it. And the profits, if we think about American way of dividing dividends of profits from the profit of the major Russian companies, no, this doesn't work this way in Russia.
Well, are most of the oligarchs actually ex-members of the or former members, or even present members of the secret police?
No, because the oligarchs actually were born when Yeltsin was in power. And when Yeltsin was in power, he allowed people to take as much initiative as they're able to handle. And, of course, in Russia, after the collapse of the Soviet Union in August of 1991...
Hold that thought there for just a moment as we bring our stations on board, please. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Yuri Felsitsinsky, and we're talking to him about his book. Now, his book is a fascinating insight into what's going on. It's titled Blowing Up Russia, and, of course, the co-author was, of course, Alexander Litvinenko, who was poisoned last year, because the last thing that the Putin government wants is for America, indeed for the world, to realize that all this facade of, democracy and elections, it's all a facade. I mean, certainly the KGB is now increasingly tightening its control over Russia. People are simply being wantonly killed, either shot down or poisoned, and this is happening as they consolidate their control. Now, I was asking whether or not the oligarchs, the so-called ruling elite there, these multi-billionaires in Russia, were members of former members of the Soviet secret police, and you were starting to answer that question for me.
Right. The oligarchs were born when President Yeltsin, of course, was in charge of Russia. And after the collapse of the Soviet Union in August of 1991, he allowed people to take as much power in their hand as they could handle. And, of course, there were no laws at this time, including tax laws or economic laws. And, of course, the Soviet legal system could not be working for the new situation. And this allowed, many people of this, wild capitalism to earn a lot of money. But they were doing it because they were smart enough and brave enough and were hoping for the democratic development in Russia. Now, this change, of course, with President Putin, and those oligarchs who were not agree to stop their political activity in their fight for democratic Russia, because you cannot have market economy together with dictatorship of President Putin and the Russian Secret Service. And Russian oligarchs knew this. People like Berezovsky, people like Khodorkovsky, they knew that there is no way Putin will allow them to be rich if they control the country. And all other oligarchs who agreed with Putin, yes, they do allow, of course, them to exist, but we know that in any particular minute, those oligarchs might be destroyed very, very quickly. We've seen what was happening to Yukos of Khodorkovsky. Not only Khodorkovsky was put in prison, in like 5 minutes. His company, which was a major oil company in Russia, was destroyed by the government. And if you think whether this was, profitable for the country or profitable for the government, of course not. They were doing it in order to show that they do not care whether it's profitable for people, government, and the Russian economy. They would do it as an example to show what would happen to the richest country in Russia if he tries to be in opposition to Putin.
Well, now, of course, is there much of a foreign presence there? Many of the American or European corporations over there working, helping to develop the oil or the gas or the industrial potential there in Russia?
Well, we know the history of foreign investment into the Soviet Union since 1917. We know that foreigners always invested money into the Soviet Union. We know that foreigners always invest money to many questionable countries with, questionable government and questionable economy. So this doesn't really indicate that Russia is a country which is developing the normal way or which goes into the right direction. This just tells us, that history of investment, foreign investment, or history of capitalism, includes the investment into questionable countries.
And of course, the thing is, the average American doesn't know this, and I think it's such an important issue that the average American really doesn't understand that American capitalists have been investing in Russia since going back to 1917, 1918, and I don't think that they, either Lenin or Stalin or any of the other dictators could have maintained their dictatorship without constant infusions of technology and money from the West. I think that we have done a disservice to the Russian people by helping these ruthless dictators. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Well, of course, if you are talking strictly from political point of view, then of course those foreign investments help to build or to strengthen the Soviet economy, including Soviet military power. And we know from history of 20s and 30s that that's exactly how Russian military power was built during the most terrible time when Stalin was ruling the country. And this is not a great secret at all. Major American corporations were building factories in Russia, which were used as a tank factories. All major American companies exported steel to Russia because Russia could not produce its own steel. That's the ABC. It's known. This is not a secret at all. And we also know how some very famous and very important paintings appeared in American museums. They were sold by the Russian government in exchange for those factories because Russia didn't have money actually to pay for those factories. So the agreement was that they will sell Rembrandt and Raphael and other major paintings from the Soviet museums to cover the cost of those factories, of those experts.
Well, of course, now, what can be done at the present time? Certainly, Putin is the supreme ruler in Russia. I don't think anybody dares challenge him. I mean, certainly they're doing everything they can to strengthen both the military and the KGB, and even if they can never get the army back to where it was before, why, of course, certainly it can be used to subjugate the people. This is my concern. So,
well, being realistic and being pragmatic, unfortunately, we have to say that there is not too much the West is ready to do now for several reasons. Number one is that the price of oil and gas is very high, and the gas is, and oil is very important, not even for the United States, but for Europe. So Europe is not ready to have major conflict with Putin over the internal policy of Mr. Putin because of those economic developments and because of this economic policy of the Russian government. The United States, at the same time, as we know, unfortunately, is much weaker today because of war in Iraq. And this changed a lot in the relations between the United States and Russia, as well as between the United States and Europe. And the United States, unfortunately, is not in a position now to force President Putin to change his course. At the same time, I have to say that for President Putin, it is very important to be seen as a progressive leader. And as long as the leaders of European countries and the United States, look at his eyes and tell him that he is a nice guy, he is not going definitely to change his policy at all. I think if the Western leaders would, on personal level, express his opposition to Putin, this may change a lot in his behavior, because once again, it is very important for Putin to be considered to be one of the, one of the group, one of the A7, G7, G8, I mean, he wants to be one of them. And if he's rejected, then this is, of course, a problem for him. So I think it's very important that Putin would understand that he is rejected. It is my understanding, by the way, that he now had no relations for some time since the poisoning of Litvinenko with Prime Minister Blair of Britain because of Litvinenko poisoning. And I think this is a good lesson for Putin because that's the only way to punish him for this murder. And we probably would never know whether Putin gave the order to kill Litvinenko or not. But this is, I think, not very important because he is guilty in any case. If he gave the order, then, of course, he is guilty of being involved of murder of British citizen in London because Litvinenko received British citizenship in October of 2006. And he did not give the order explicitly prior to the murder, then, of course, he is guilty in creating a situation when the Russian Secret Service is allowed to kill people abroad, being unpunished in Russia, because as far as we know, no one was punished for the murder of Alexander Litvinenko in London. All generals sustained and keeping their positions. We did not hear that somebody was fired. So I guess Putin approved the murder.
I think we have to assume that since the British have asked to, of course, interview several of these suspects who had fled to Russia, and, of course, the Russian and the secret police refused to allow the British to interview them. So certainly, if Putin were really interested in justice, he would intervene. He has not intervened. And certainly, by not intervening, he becomes as guilty as if he'd given the order himself.
Well, we also know, of course, that polonium, which is a radioactive material, could be received only with the permission of the FSB, of the Russian Secret Service, because everything what's connected to radioactivity in Russia is by law secured by the FSB, and there is no way you could get even close to polonium without clearance from the central FSB office. So there is no way those two FSB officers who were poisoning Litvinenko on 1st of November in London could get polonium without permission of the central FSB office.
Well, because one of the things that disturbs me very, very much is that apparently that Russia is one of the major sources of weaponry for Iran and for Syria, and has been supplying weapons to these two countries, which it's conceivable the United States might be going to war with in the near future. Russia has supplied not only surface-to-air missiles, but, of course, the intermediate-range missiles that could be targeted at both Europe and Israel, and then, of course, anti-tank weapons, and then, of course, surface-to-ship missiles that could be used to take out American carriers. It's almost as if, in many respects, both Syria and Iran are operating as simply extensions of the Russian foreign policy. They're the ones we see as the enemy, but Russia is really, of course, beginning to flex its muscles and beginning to use these other countries to do its bidding. Do you see this as a real menace to the United States and to our policies?
Well, first of all, there is a history, as we know, of Russian Secret Service and Russian military being involved in semi-legal or illegal sales of weapons to questionable countries, including countries like Iran, like Syria, etc. So there is nothing new in this, and this policy just continues. And as we do know, Russia, probably takes now the first place in selling weapons to foreign countries. At the same time, I have to say that this is probably, again, does not bring any change to the major Russian policy. It probably was much easier for the United States to talk to Russia when Yeltsin was in power. I do not think that it was easy for the United States to talk to Russia when the Soviet government was in power. But as I told you before, I think Russia is still not able to present a danger as a nuclear power or as a military power to the United States. I also do not think that it's in the interest of Russia to have countries like Iran having nuclear weapons, because Iran is very close to Russia, of course, and this is a Muslim country, and Russia has a lot of problems with its own Muslim population. So I think that Russian government will have enough brains, not to help Iran in building nuclear weapons. At the same time, unfortunately, this doesn't mean that the Russian government will help the United States to deal with Iran and to the nuclear problem of Iran. And unfortunately, we cannot rely on Russia, and we cannot hope that Russia is going to be an American ally in this issue.
Well, of course, my concern is that by providing the weapons for Iran and certainly giving it at least some tacit backing, America could be involved in even an expansion of the war over there. And I'm sure there are people within Russia who'd love to see us fight to the last American soldier in the Middle East and the last aircraft carrier. And they could simply sit on the sidelines and watch it unfold exactly as we did when the Russians were trapped in Afghanistan in the 1980s. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the Russian TV, which is controlled by the Russian government now, of course tries to portray the United States as an aggressive power who is trying to widen the military operation and to continue it in Iran at the same time as they have military operations in Iraq. So on ideological front, yes, we are dealing with the Russian government, which is criticizing the United States and which is portraying the United States as an aggressive power. This is happening now, and, the Russian government probably officially does not support this, but unofficially it's allowed certain journalists to, to have a voice during the major shows, the prime time, major channels, etc. So, again, I think we are dealing with the Russian government headed by President Putin, who completely change, completely change political situation in Russia in the course of the last 8 years. And this started slowly in 2000, 2002, and now, unfortunately, before 2008, it's going to be very, very difficult and dangerous for all of us.
And I share your concern. Our guest is Yuri Piltushinsky, and his book, Blowing Up Russia. Where can people get your book, Yuri?
Oh, well, everywhere. It was printed in the United States a couple of weeks ago, and it's available on Amazon.com, and, of course, it's available in all major bookstores.
All right, fine. It's an excellent
book. It also
was
published in Britain several months ago.
All right, fine. Well, it's an excellent book. I'm sure that Yuri's life really is in danger for having done what he does. I certainly congratulate him. Hold on, we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, we have 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What are the thoughts that you would like to leave with our listeners' office, here across America, indeed across the world? What do you foresee happening in Russia? Is there anyone who has the stature to actually challenge Putin as he begins to centralize power and as Russia begins moving away from democratic representation back into the police state it was under Lenin and Stalin?
Well, I'm afraid for the nearest years we have to be very skeptical, because in 2008 we will have two possibilities. The first possibility is that Putin will stay for the third term. This is going to be in violation of the Russian Constitution, and he definitely is going to be seen by everybody as a dictator. Nevertheless, there is a chance that he will stay as a president for the third term. I personally do not think so. I think he will not be running for the next 4 years for the voters. But I think that somebody else from the FSB, somebody like Putin, will be promoted to this position by the Russian Secret Service and will be the next president of Russia for the next 4 or 8 years. So I think, in the course of the nearest 10 years, we have to be very skeptical. What happens later, I do not know. As a historian, I'm genuinely an optimist, and I think Russia will be able to survive again, and Russia will be able to change this regime the way it was changed in August of 91, when Russia was dealing with the fall of communism.
Well, do you look upon the possibility of them coming after you? Because you're writing just objective history. You may be just a historian, but ideas have consequences, and I think that those people who would be tyrants fear people with ideas.
Well, I left Russia in 78 for two reasons: to stay a free man and to write and tell what I want, and that's what I do. That's what I do all these years. And I think there is a price for everything. There is also a price to be honest and price for being honest. And I think also that, many of us, especially many of journalists who are dealing with difficult topics, have to risk their lives. What could we do? This is our life. This is our profession. That's what we do. That's why we were born.
You have to do what's right. Yuri, I admire you. I respect you for having the courage to write this book and for being willing to. Because your partner, Alexander, laid his life on the line. You're doing the same thing. God bless you. Thank you so very much for being our guest.
Thank you for the invitation.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, as you know, Yuri's partner, co-author of the book, Alexander Litvinenko, was actually murdered by the KGB. When I was asking Yuri while we were in the intermission if he feared for his life, he said, well, he's a historian, he has to write, there's a price to pay for everything. And ladies and gentlemen, I wish more Americans felt that way. There's a price to pay for freedom. What price are you willing to pay? We have the most wonderful country in the world here. It's been taken over by evil and wicked people. If you don't think that they actually kill people in this country, why, you've never studied the murder of, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, and I can tell you a number of the people that I have interviewed here on my program have been killed. I've actually interviewed three assassins. They were employed by the government to kill people. And, of course, they don't necessarily admit that they've done it, but the inference is that they were certainly prepared to do it, and they may have done it, but since there's no statute of limitation on murder, they're not going to come onto my program and admit it. But this is the sort of thing in the real world. There is a power structure going on, and behind that there are powerful spiritual forces. If you would be interested in getting Yuri's book, and we get enough requests for it, it's $25. Why, we'll be glad to order it and provide it. If you'd like to get Blowing Up Russia, you can give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. How do you begin to put this into perspective? Well, you really need, of course, to understand the spiritual forces at work, and if you would like to get a copy of our February newsletter, it's posted on our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Now, remember, this is written for people who have an understanding of what's really going on. And, of course, it takes you beyond behind the scenes, what is really going on, not what you're going to read in the newspaper or hear on the controlled media, because our media is just as controlled in America as it is in Russia. Well, probably not. We can still have programs like this. How long we'll have them, I don't know. But at least we have the Internet. We have the ability to reach people. And, of course, God willing, why, we'll be here as long as God gives us breath to try to get people to understand we're involved in a spiritual battle being fought on a political battlefield. If you would like a free copy of my February newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to put this thing into its overall perspective, my talk, Brotherhood of Darkness, the talk, DVD or video, or the book, and then, of course, the second stage, it would be Forbidden Secret. There is a secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years, and, of course, when you understand it, you can understand why our troops are fighting in the Middle East and why I believe we will soon be at war with Iran. And then, of course, if you have not yet seen the wonderful documentaries, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginnings or Riddles in Stone, they're both available from Radio Liberty. And then, of course, you need to get Joe Schimmel's videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. The video we carry, The Rape of the Soul, we just got a great supply of that in, going into, of course, embedded art. And you see, what does art have to do with anything? It has nothing to do with it. It has everything to do with it. And you need to see how it all begins to fit together. And then, of course, I think Chris Pitto's DVDs, Megiddo 1 and Megiddo 2, will give you the overall spiritual perspective of what's going on. Understand we're living in dangerous times, and, of course, please pray for America, pray for revival, pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Our website, radioliberty.com, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Well, the people of Russia are soon going to be losing their freedom. Do the American people deserve to keep their freedom?